Hello everyone, thank you for joining us today physically and also... Test. So okay, we're trying to start... thank you for joining us today physically and also who joins online. I'd like to introduce a colleague of mine, Girolov Dirkubotn, who is an officer at the Norwegian Armed Forces and also associate professor at CCIS Center for Cyber Information Security here at Gjøvik. Girolov will be talking about cyber operations today. Yes, please, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Well, that feedback was just to wake everybody up. So hopefully everybody's awake now. So thank you for the introduction, André. As the first slides indicate, I have two hats. So I'm a major in the armed forces and also an associate professor here at NTNU. A lot of the material in this talk is based on my experience working in the cyber defense at the Warfare Center, trying to figure out how we're going to protect our networks. We'll see how things go. Please interrupt with questions. I have about 30 slides and a hard deadline at 1, so we'll see how far we get. All right. I usually start with this as a motivation. These are old numbers, but I think they're still valid to talk about why are we in this field, why are we working with this. The top number is from the World Economic Forum back in 2013. I've seen newer study, I just haven't updated the numbers, but still valid. It estimates the increase in the GDP for Norway when we use more modern technology or we digitize our society. So we do this and it creates more jobs and this can be turned into a monetary number. And in 2013, it was estimated to 24 billion Norwegian krona per year. And then, of course, there's a almost equal size number at the bottom there. That's from the Center for Strategic Studies back in 2014. There are updates to that number too. It's not going down unfortunately. That indicates how much we lose due to cybercrime. Both these numbers are not correct, their estimates, but to me they indicate an important fact. We're always saying, let's use more technology, let's be more modern, let's digitize, so we can get the benefit of the new technology. But a lot of that benefit is taken away. We lose it due to people that don't want us well. So that's at least, for me, a good motivation for working in this field. Either work to get that top number higher or work to decrease the bottom number to create a bigger gap so that we can use more for welfare, social stability, jobs, and so forth. Coming from the military, there's also an analogy here. We spend a lot of money on modern equipment. Of course, we want that to increase the effect that we can create if the politicians choose to use us. But there are people that are trying to take away from our gain as well. I don't know if you watch QI, Stephen Fry. I love that program. But during this lecture, see if you can spot the digital forensics task. I'm not going to point them out directly, but keep that in mind. You're here. This is an introduction to digital forensics. So where in this talk do you see opportunities or relevance for digital forensics? So back to basics. What is cyberspace? A lot of information on this slide, and there's a reason for it, because there's many, many different ways of defining cyberspace. Some call it cyber domain. I wrote cyberspace. It is acknowledged by NATO, at least, as the fifth warfare domain. And my favorite or the one I use the most is the one written on top there, emerging properties of complex systems. And if you want to look into what a complex system is, I have copied a small figure down to the right there. You find game theory, collective behavior, networks, evolution and adaption, pattern formation, system theory, nonlinear dynamics. And underneath there, again, there are tons of subjects. So complex systems is a huge and well-studied area. What I found is that cyberspace is a complex system, and you have infrastructure. You have the technology that builds this, and that's often what many people focus on. Equally important is the activity. How do we use it? More and more people are also focusing on that, luckily. But I think that's many times ignored too much. In the cyber defense, we're talking about digital value chains, so how things are connected. Supply chain attacks have been in the news lately, so that should be easy to read up on. And also digital ecosystems. Nobody designed internet the way it is today. This is, in our view, an ecosystem that evolved, much like in nature, where you have evolution and different species compete to gain an upper hand in these ecosystems. Much of the same processes, we believe, takes place in cyberspace. And then just for reference, I included NATO's definitions. Read that if you're interested. Let's take a step back. We have done information security for a long, long time. And there are tons of rules, regulations, laws that we have developed in this area. And these are control systems. And focus here is on implementing confidentiality, integrity, and availability. There are a few other terms that have appeared lately, but CIA is the mainstream topics here. So we have a lot of experience and research and work done in this area. So does it work? Of course it works. But we still get these cases. Hopefully you'll recognize a few of these. You have Maersk, one of the largest container companies moving containers in the world. Up top there, got a huge case where they get infected due to a software update in a Ukrainian program. You have Østre Toten, the county here, was attacked. You have the parliament in Norway. You have the health system in Norway. SolarWinds, hopefully you guys have heard of that, the supply chain attack. Most recently, I've included Viasat when Russia crossed the border into Ukraine. The satellite system for Viasat was attacked. We have the famous Stuxnet, Hydro, and their ransomware attack. And bottom right, my other job, we also been attacked in Afghanistan. So even though we have lots of experience with information security, this still happens. So why? Well, if you can answer that, you're going to make a lot of money and save the world, I hope. This is just a little bit. There's much more, and I don't pretend this is a complete picture, but the information security focus that we had for many, many years was based on quality assurance, find deviations and reduce them, and very often statistics, stochastic events to predict what is going on. And also often a compliance-based security. If you're compliant with this ISO standard, everything is okay. But then we see, and this is a development that's been going on for over 20 years, the threat landscape and the cyber terrain has changed. And I'll try to illustrate that with a couple of slides. That was probably mine. Yep. So the cyber terrain, and this is just one example, but if you study a field that is called scale-free networks and something where you can do research on topology or how networks are connected, what we see is that a lot of the networks on in cyberspace, both physical networks but also social networks, what websites you go to, we see that they follow what we call a power law, meaning that there are a few nodes in these networks that have extreme number of connections. And then you have a lot of nodes that will only have a few. And it's very easy to show that if you have these type of networks, you're pretty good against random attacks. So the traditional faults or random things happening, these networks might be robust against that. But once you're up against an intelligent adversary that chooses the targets deliberately, this crumbles like a deck of cards house real easy. So because they can go for the big nodes and take them first, and this just falls apart. So this is one of the things that we saw quite early, that we're not dealing with the random attacks that was the focus, at least in the security, more traditional security work in the beginning. But against targeted attacks, this we needed to think new. Then, of course, the threat landscape. And this is not going to be a talk about what the threat landscape looks like, but just to show you, since early, say, 80s, 90s, and up until now, has been a quite a dramatic change in the threat landscape. Where early, I remember going to school in the 90s, and it was fun to sit at the computer lab and see if we could mess with a student or fellow student next to us. And just, it was more just for fun and maybe to get some cred in the with your friends. Then we moved our money, or it was more and more easy to make have a monetary gain on the net. And that's when the criminals move there. They're opportunistic. They follow the cash. I usually say that when you walked around the street with a pocket full of cash, you got mugged on the street. When the cash went into the bank machine, we see that the criminals attack the machines. And now with online banking and most of the money is going digital, well, that's where the criminals are. So they're opportunistic and they're following the cash. But we've also seen growth in state-based and organized threats in this landscape for either political or military power. It could be to outcompete your competitor. It could be to disinform your citizens, or to collect information about your neighboring states or your neighboring company. Very often in the news, you see this under the umbrella of cyber attacks. But that intelligence organization, armed forces and state sponsors group have moved into this. That's old news today. It's kind of a given that they are there. So this also moved us more away from random attacks to targeted attacks. So I'm sure you can find, maybe you already know this threat landscape, maybe you've had it in other classes, but just to give you one example of how to categorize this, I usually keep this slide from 2016, but it's still valid today. This is one way that the EU CERT divides the threat landscape. And they talk about cyber espionage, collecting either information about government, military, diplomacy at a strategic level, or it could be economic between companies, either to steal somebody's clever idea or to see that your bid for a contract is outcompeting them. We see cyber used in conflicts between states, in regional conflicts, and also what we call hybrid warfare. I think the war in Ukraine is going to be a textbook on this soon. We already see people trying to analyze and figure out how that was done or is done. It's still ongoing. Cybercrime, like I said, they're opportunistic. They're following the where the money is. And ransomware is probably the number one that's being used now. There's a lot of money to be made there. Then it's personal information. So information about you, that's valuable for a number of reasons. Targeted commercial is just one. But also as a, if you work in a company that somebody wants to attack, information about you as a person might help them create the email that somebody will fall for and click on. We see attacks on different sectors, all sectors now in energy, health, transport, and so forth. Then we have seen, at least a little bit slow right now, but cyber jihadism, where it's used for propaganda and recruitment. And just to illustrate, this can be really, it doesn't have to be technically advanced. I've seen one of these recruitment sites claiming that they hacked Pentagon. And what they've done is that they've taken a screenshot of the website that anyone can go to at Pentagon. And then they post it and say, hey, we hacked Pentagon. And there's enough people that fall for that, just as there are people that fall for the Nigeria scams. And then, of course, cyber repression, where you use this to keep your citizens happy or keep them from rioting, keep journalists under control, and so forth. So this is what this is one way. It's probably many other ways of organizing this, but there's a real threat out there from many different groups that you should be aware of. So defensive, let's move over to the topic of this talk. So defensive cyber operation. I'm going to dig a little bit into what I mean by that, but just to be absolutely clear from the beginning, this is not about fixing computers. If the server breaks, cyber operations is not about fixing it. In the same way that naval operations, when we send our warships out at sea, we don't do that to fix the ships or keep them. Of course, it's important to keep them floating and that they work, but that's not the main objective. It could be that we're fighting pirates in the Aden Bay, but that's the main objective, not that the server is functioning. So that's why I'm written there, defending operations, not information and technology. And it's taken us time to arrive at this this statement, both in Norway and NATO. When I started this is a 20-year-plus journey that started in the early 2000 when we bought our first IDSs and firewalls, and we started looking at what's going on in the networks. And I call this phase one. Phase one was incident-driven. You have some sensors detecting something. You wait until the detector flags and say, hey, something's going on, red alarm. Then you find out what happened. You fix it and strengthen the firewall, and you wait for the next alarm. Problem with that is that you get thousands, if not millions, of alarms. You're never going to be able to handle all of them. And you don't know if you handle the important ones. That led to the next maturity level or phase two, where we said, how can we make sure that we ignore the alarms that are not relevant for us and focus on the ones that are hurting us? That's what we used intelligence information to say, this threat actor is important for us to follow. This is how they operate. Let's go and hunt for them. Let's look for them. Ignore all the 10,000 alarms that are, at least from the military side, is criminals or small things that the police should handle. Let's focus on the nation states that can really hurt. Then we realized that still in phase two, we're sort of behind. Even though we're hunting what the adversary is already planning and doing. So we're one step behind. So we're thinking, how can we take back the initiative? and not be driven by what the adversary decides to do. That's when we moved into operational driven, where we say it's our operation and the goal that we have set that are important. What do we have to do in order to make sure our mission is successful, regardless of what's going on or what somebody else is messing around and doing in our network? So resilience is a keyword, and mission assurance. And then, of course, as a scientist, I always wonder what phase four is. Don't have a clue. But I'm guessing that machine learning or artificial intelligence might be play a role there. But that's it's hard to predict. So computer, last sentence. Also, computer, I teach malware analysis. And malware you find on a computer. But I have never seen malware where the computer is the target. And if you think about that a little bit, the malware is put there to make the computer misbehave, but it wants you to do something different. So the target is you. Either pay the ransom, let me have that information, change your mind, make the wrong decision. So that's worth thinking about. Cyber operations versus cybersecurity. Just included it just to make that difference even clearer. And I have one more slide also, because for us this is important. So they're both addressing the cyber threat. But cybersecurity, and if you read definitions in the book, they refer to a state where something happens and then you in a different state where things are not secure anymore, and you're trying to get back to that state. So a state where CIA, confidentiality, integrity, availability, is maintained against a cyber threat, and it's often guided by policies, and you're trying to get back to this state. But cyber operations we define as an activity to protect and defend against the cyber threat. And this is guided by the military objectives, or if you're a company, we also believe this way of thinking is useful for businesses, so guided by your business goal. So if your business goal is be the preferred supplier, then your business goal should be the one guiding you when you're attacked by a threat actor, not whether your server is secure or not. But of course, as I tried to indicate in the bottom here, sometimes securing and fixing your server is what's going to make your company make money. So sometimes these objectives are overlapping. Other times you can say, that server does not influence my ability to make money. So forget about it. Let's focus on what to do so we can keep our business up and keep being a preferred supplier. All this through 20 years have led us to these three focus areas. They're all important, but they're also representing a distinction between how we focus. We have in Norway Sikkerhetsloven, the security law. That's a law. We have to follow it, and it has tells us that we have to maintain a reasonable level of security to protect the information system and digital services. So this is regulated by law and is there to give a sort of a minimum layer for all components that we use. So let's say the tablet over there. So if you follow that, you have a certain layer. Then we take these components, we put them together in our, he says, the armed forces systems. And the armed forces systems, guess from the picture over there, that's our artillery, tanks, fighter planes, boats. So when we put all this together, we want to protect those systems against cyber attacks. Then we're talking cybersecurity. And then we use all our systems. If the politicians send us somewhere and decide to use us, then we need to conduct defensive cyber operations. But then it's not about protecting the tablet up there. It's not about protecting necessarily artillery and the tanks. It's about protecting the operation represented by military symbols over there so we can reach our end state. So this all, when we plan operations, we use a certain methodology. This is not the only way to do it, but this is both NATO and probably most military organizations will use something similar. It says here, operations can be understood as a series of coordinated activities with a specific objective and a way to organize and carry out large and complex tasks. That links back to what I said, that the cyberspace, there's complex systems, a complex situation. So operating, doing something in cyberspace is a complex task. And we see more and more that this way of thinking applies for the cyberspace as well. What this figure indicates, and there's some references down here if you're interested, but and you don't need to know the details, but the big picture here is that we have a current situation where the politicians, or we, Norway, or somebody else, is not happy. It's something is unacceptable. On the other end, we have an end state. We want a future situation where we're happy or more content about the condition. How do we get there? Well, this methodology then builds some objectives. Say, if we reach objective 1, 2, and 3, it could be 7, or it could be 2, then we think that these conditions are acceptable or we're in that end state. How do we reach these objectives? Well, we choose different lines of operations. In each of them, we have actions. These are tactics, things that we do. And each of these tactics, we want to create an effect. We might be successful or we might fail. That's the, yeah, what's the plan is only valid until you meet the enemy or something like that. It's so this needs to be, this is not a guarantee. But we do things to create effects. And then we have DC as decisive condition. That's sort of a steps along the way that we have to reach in order to get to the objective. So this is our way of thinking. We have a current situation. We're not happy. We want to get over there. We plan for different actions, hoping for certain effects that will lead to certain objectives. And in the end, we hopefully reach our objectives. And when I talk about complex situations, I have two slides just to tease your mind a little bit about what this can be. This is not something I've come up with. This is based on lots of theory. We teach this in the cyber tactics class. I'll come back to that later. What this is trying to show is blue arrows. If you take digitization in the middle there, if you have an increase in digitization, all these blue arrows means increase in what they point to. So more digitization, more partners, more market access, more innovation, but lower cost with the red arrow. And all this leads to maybe increased competitiveness, maybe better future prospects. You see stable societies up there. And then up to your left, there's an advanced persistent threat or a state actor or somebody that want to influence this through cyber attacks, influencing, or espionage. We have cybercrime over there that might be helped by these state entities. The point is, these are complex interconnections. This is not the truth. This is a model that we ignored a lot of things that are going on. This will be on your exam. Excuse me. This is somebody trying to use the same methodology to describe what went on in Afghanistan. What I wanted to take away from here is if you change one of these, so if you want to do something and you change one of these, how can you predict what's going to happen in the whole complex system? And that's really why in the military, we have this, because this is a methodology trying to define where we want to go, what do we want as the overall effect, and we're trying to work out how, what can we do in order to maneuver in this complex system here. Sometimes we're successful, sometimes we fail. For cyber operations, we have made a draft. This is the current one that we sort of think is a good idea. We have, in order to get from the unacceptable conditions over to the acceptable condition, we have defined shape, protect, defend. And what we're hoping with shape, detect, defend is to ensure what we call freedom of action. We want our military units to not be limited by what other people are doing in cyber domain. So we want to be able to keep our freedom of operation so we can decide what we want to do. We often talk about what is the most dangerous the adversary can do and what is the most likely they can do. That's what we address with these two first ones. Shape, we want to shape the cyber domain so that at least they can't get away with what's most dangerous, or at least reduce the risk for them choosing that. Then we want to protect against what we think is the most likely. What do you think they're going to do? So we're going to make it harder for them to do that, and at least we want to detect if they choose that. And then the last one, defend. That's when they choose to do something. They actually do attack us. That's when we have, okay, now we can't sit and guess what's most dangerous and most likely anymore. They actually did something that we need to relate to. 10 minutes left, is that right?
Yes.
Right? Then I'll move on. So that was cyber operations. And then I want to mention cyber kill chain, because cyber kill chain is by, well, it's been debated left and right whether it's useful or not, but a lot of people find it useful for communicating information you find in a cyber attack. It's actually a way of categorizing what the enemy or the adversary needs to go through in order to do harm or, let's say, action on objectives. The bottom here. It's inspired by American Air Force methodology, but it's now kind of mainstream in cyber defense as well. So what they're saying is that you need to do reconnaissance, find out what as much as you can about the target. You need to build a weapon, usually malware. You need to deliver the malware to a system. You need to exploit some kind of vulnerability to get the malware in. You need to make sure it's executed and installed, hidden on your system. Then you want it to communicate back and forth with somebody controlling it. We call that command and control, or C2. And finally, there's a purpose behind this. You want to achieve something. So this is useful to understand what they're doing, but it's also useful to plan your defense. And you can also use it to build understanding of what's going on. I'm not going to go into this now, but when we finally are able to attribute certain attacks to an APT-28 or a terrorist group or state-sponsored group, very often this kind of analysis of many campaigns are behind this, where we see patterns over time. But I want to put this in context with what we already talked about. The bottom one is the current state, end state, not for us, but for the adversary. They also have an unhappy situation today, and they want to go to a happier place later. So they are, these campaigns that they're launching on us, they're trying to create effects towards objectives and an end state that we might not agree with, but they pursue it. So when we analyze in these kill chains, if we react too soon before understanding the entire kill chain or the entire intent of what they're after, so we can analyze kill chain 1, 2, and 3 and understand more and more. That's the blue dotted line. But we also need to understand what are they after, because if not, these blue little arrows with plus and minus, if we don't understand their objective, what we do might increase the effect, the plus sign, instead of what we want, decrease the effect. It also goes back to the complex system. What do we do to increase or decrease effects in a complex system? Well, first we need to try to understand what they're after. I think I have time to go through this. I'll be quick. I don't know if you saw this. Killnet, criminal pro-Russia group, according to the news, they attacked a lot of infrastructure in Norway. And this, if you just read the news, this sounded quite serious. It didn't have much damage. Nothing was down. It was just a little traffic jam, a little heavy rush hour traffic. So this was hyped in media. What I'm worried about when I see stuff like that is not what's going on. I'm wondering, is this a smokescreen? Is there something going on behind this that we don't see? So what's the intent? Is the intent here just to cause some irritation up here? Or is the intent to make us look left when something is going on to the right? So, yeah. And that this I just found a bit amusing that Anonymous came to our rescue and attacked back since they were bad against us. So, all right. Finally, in the last few minutes, I just want to mention, so you know it, what can you learn at NTNU? Because this was a lot of experience for my job, and I can't recruit you to the military. That's not my job. But we teach some courses. The orange courses there are reserved for experience-based master and lifelong learning. So if you're not part of that program, it's not relevant for you. But we do teach cyber tactics. And we teach cyber intelligence, cyber tactics in the spring, intelligence in the fall. But what I think is more fun is the reverse engineering and malware analysis. So that's why I'm going to use the last few minutes to give you a super short intro to a course that I teach during the spring. In that course, remember, have you all forgotten about the forensics application? Forensics can be used for what I'm talking about up here. In my class, we have, by some kind of magic, found malware on the system. We're not dealing in that course, but how did it get there? How did we find it? How do we secure the evidence? That's this class or forensic classes. So email, somebody tricked you into clicking, something was exploited, you have some binary on your system, and I teach four techniques to analyze that binary. Basic static analysis, take the metadata, the overhead information that the operating system needs to run the program correctly, read through it, see if some of the information there can give you a clue about what mischief the program can do, or if it's a benign program. Then we go into basic dynamic. We execute the program deliberately on our system, but we have a secure platform, a virtual machine, so that all the bad things happens inside that machine. And we look at what happens to our file system, what happened to our registry, what happens to on the network, what is this malware doing. And then what I like the most, and some students hate, some love it, we read assembly code. So we take the binary and we translate it into assembly code, because that's the most reliable code that we can reproduce when we don't know what the author actually meant. And so we get code like this and we have fun with it and try to understand what's going on. Finally, we have advanced dynamic analysis where we execute the program in a control setting, line by line. Very useful to understand specific functions in the code. So if you understood these four slides I had now, or they looked interesting, then you're ready for my course. All right. Did you find anything useful? Yeah, I'll leave that hanging there because I'm done.
Right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I don't know if we have time for questions or.
Very good presentation. Any questions from the audience? Anyone? Yes, please.
So I took that course during my bachelor's degree. Can you check it again?
You took the Malva course during your bachelor?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can take it again, but whether you get double credits, I doubt it. So, so if it's included in your bachelor, you probably used it there. So,
anyone yeah, else?
We don't have a link to the people online, so they. Too bad. You got to show up.
You can send an email to.
Yeah. People. Sure.
I have a question myself.
Oh, no.
So we're talking a lot about fake news nowadays.
Yep.
Do you think it has a major influence on, for example, on attribution of the attacks?
So how fake news influence attribution? I don't know if I... What I can say is attribution is really difficult in, well, any time, but especially in the cyberspace because you can... there's a lot of information you can fake and artifacts that you can pretend to be someone else. So, yes, of course, fake news would probably misguide the amateur, but I think the professional people doing attribution will see through that. Because they will use not only information from the malware analysis, which is really important, but the traditional intelligence methodology that we've had for hundreds, if not thousands of years, is applied, and they use multiple sources, not only technical. So I think they will see through it. But, of course, it's it makes it slower, more to go through. So, yeah.
Still, it won't prevent to have the final kind of
No, I think it makes it more difficult prevent. Maybe. I mean, it's difficult to generalize, but you have same with malware.